everybody. Welcome to the June 3rd, 2021 Orange County Juvenile Justice Coordinating Council SB 823 Subcommittee meeting. We'll go to item number one on the agenda, which is I will welcome all of you and then introductions. My name is Steve Setman. I'm the chair of the committee, and then we all need to do a roll call because we are virtually. So I'll start with Lynn Garrett, please.
Hi, I'm Lynn Garrett, and I'm the Director of Student Services for the Alternative Ed Division, Orange County Department of Ed.
Thank you, Lynn. Steve Kim.
Hi, Steve Kim, Project Kinship, Executive Director.
Thank you. Judge Motueke.
Hello, good afternoon, everybody. I'm Joanne Motueke, presiding juvenile court judge.
Thank you. Raymond Sanchez.
Hello, everybody. I'm Raymond Sanchez, Project Kinship, your Navigator Coordinator.
Thank you. Dawn Smith.
I am here, Dawn Smith, Division Manager for Children, Youth, Behavioral Health with the Healthcare Agency.
Thank you, Dawn. Kim Doyle.
Yes, good afternoon. I am from the District Attorney's Office. I'm the Assistant District Attorney. I'm the Head of Court and an Assistant District Attorney to DA Todd Spitzer. Thank you.
Thank you. Laura Jose.
Hi, good afternoon. This is Laura Jose. I'm a Senior Assistant Public Defender, and I supervise our 602 unit.
Thank you, Laura. Megan Medlin.
Hi, everyone. Megan Medlin, representing the community at large.
Thank you, Megan. Nasli Restrepo.
Nasli Restrepo, community member, also Associate Director for Project Youth, OCBF, nonprofit in Santana.
Thank you, Nasli. And Ken Santini.
Good afternoon, Ken Santini, Social Services Agency, Deputy Division Director of Children and Family Services.
All right, Ken, thank you. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for being here today. Item number two on our agenda is discussion and approval of need for designee and alternatives. And if you remember our previous meeting on May 17th, we did ensure that we had, for those individuals that wanted designee or alternative. One individual that wasn't able to be on the call was Nasli Restrepo. So Nasli, at this time, I'd like to see if you would like a designee to attend these meetings on your behalf if you cannot be present.
Yes, I'll designate my Martha Madrid, Associate Director of Project Youth OCBF.
Martha Madrid. Okay, and Jamie, we'll need to vote on that.
Yeah, first ask for public comments and then you can vote.
Gotcha. Okay. This time, Jamie, do we have any public comments related to item number two?
If anybody wishes to speak, if you can hit star 9 on your phone for item number two or the raise hand icon on the Zoom app. No, no requests.
Okay. Thank you, Jamie. So at this time, we'll do a roll call vote to approve Martha Madrid as the designee for Nasli Restrepo in her absence for these meetings.
We need a motion and a second first.
What? I'll make a motion for that.
I'll second.
Thank you, Kim. I appreciate that. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion related to the designee for Nasli Restrepo? Hearing none, we will do a roll call vote, Jamie. Steve Satman, aye. Lynn Garrett?
Aye.
Steve Kim?
Aye.
Judge Motueke?
Aye.
Raymond Sanchez?
Aye.
Dawn Smith?
Aye.
Kim Doyle?
Aye.
Laura Jose?
Aye.
Thank you, Laura. Megan Medlin?
Yes.
Nasli Restrepo?
Yes.
And Ken Santini?
Aye.
Thank you. All right, Jamie. All right, we're going to move down to item number three, and I'm going to get pretty tech savvy on you guys here, so be patient with me as I'm going to bring up the worksheet that we are going to be working on here. Okay. You guys can all see that okay?
Yes.
I know it's moving. I apologize. So this is the draft plan worksheet, and until we can meet in person, hopefully that'll be soon. I wanted to make sure we brought this up today to continue our discussion. This is what we went through our last meeting, and we began to have some discussion discussing the 8 different areas that are part of the plan. obviously part one is the subcommittee composition, which we have. I just need to fill in more of your information, and I will work on that. And then the second part starts with part two, briefly describe the county's realignment target. I apologize for the ambulance going down Main Street there real quick. All right.
Chief, can I interrupt for just a second?
Yeah.
It might just be me, but I'm only able to see your desktop and the clicking of the file, but not the file itself.
Yeah, no. I agree. That's true.
I apologize. How about now?
Nope.
It looks like
no.
Same thing.
You probably have the desktop, wrong desktop being shared. So go ahead and unshare and then make sure you write that click on the right desktop.
Okay. Thank you for all my IT assistance there. How about that? Still no?
Click share.
Whoop. What help? I have another assistance coming in to help me. Here. This right. You guys all know Brian Prieto. He's going to assist me.
It worked perfect when we practiced.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Okay, there we go. All right, I appreciate that. Again, I'm just hoping to start meeting in person would really assist me in many ways. So with our document here, this is the draft plan that was the attachment. And I started to fill in some of the information. And most of this information comes right from the legislation itself. To continue our conversations, you've got the different eight parts as it relates to the plan itself that we'll be working on submitting. Here's our names and obviously everybody that's assigned, and I've got to fill in emails and phone numbers. And then starting with part two, I basically briefly described the county's realignment target population supported by the block grant. So I used the information about the target population, and we just did some in the yellow here. It's just some initial numbers just to show you. Chief Deputy Daniel Hernandez provided this for me. And this is just something in a framework as we go through the sections and information I would be asking from each one of you that we'd want to fill in the areas. But just during the time frame from January 2020 till today, we've only had two youth committed to DJJ. As you can see through the yellow there, the age ranging was from 19 years old to 27 years old, and no females. The average age of discharge is 22. And I think what's key about those numbers alone is our numbers are small, but looking at the individuals we'll be dealing with, especially in the transition phase, they'll be of adult age, and we'll need to take that into consideration.
Steve, this is Daniel.
Yeah.
So just real quick, so that we had two youth go to DJJ, but the age range and the average age, as well as the offense summary, refers to all seven that are currently there. So
okay.
That's why, yeah, we didn't send a 27-year-old.
Oh.
There happens to be one there already of our seven that are there.
Thank you, Daniel, jumping in before the judge had a question, because she was probably going to quickly ask about that 27-year-old. So that would be the ages of the seven we currently have at DJJ. Thank you, Daniel, for that clarification. And then as we continue down, and we're going to work on getting some of the other numbers, but this would be something of a consideration that we want to put in our plan. More importantly, as we continue to build a plan for programs and services and transitional services and into the community, understanding the type of youth we have with the demographics that we have. Even though we did not send any female youth, clearly I have that identified in here in one portion. We're going to need to be aware of that when that time comes, if it happens, on what type of services they would need. From the seven youth, six of them were committed for serious violent offenses, felony offenses, and one of the youth was committed for a sex offense crime.
Given the target population, I think we actually need to go a little bit broader. Just my two cents, because our identified target population is defined by 1990, I think, that's been recently enacted, which you identify and you describe in the, I think it's question or data point part one. So I think, part two, sorry. So our target population is defined as set forth in the code. So it's actually a bigger population than just the committed kids to DJJ. So that's why I think we might need to go a little bit broader in this, the demographics of the targeted population.
Okay. And Judge, in looking at that too, I'm following what you're saying here, is we have to look at, again, we're just looking at the committed youth, and what you're talking about is the general population that we would have in our care, which could be much younger, and maybe not necessarily to the age that we see with this group here.
Exactly. Because it's the...
just provided as a baseline, kind of who is already there, but not as who would only be the population.
Right. Because now I think we have to look at just the youth who are identified with 707B allegations and have been adjudicated in juvenile court.
Okay. Thank you, Judge and Daniel. I appreciate that. Again, this... to continue our conversations, as we did a lot of note taking last week, I just want to kind of put together. So I will make note of that, and we will broaden that section. Okay, and then as we move down to the next section, is describing any additional relevant information pertaining to identified target populations, including programs, placements, facilities to which they have been referred. And I left this just blank here in the yellow. But again, to have some opening lines for our plan, the Orange County Probation Department operates a range of prevention and diversion programs to intervene services. You guys can read that. I don't need to read all that to you. But then we would start plugging in the different services and also to be able to identify the gaps where we have. I think it was key to put in here that only higher risk to offend youth are referred to formal intervention. That verbiage actually could change too, but that it could be a first-time offense. Unfortunately, the 707B offense could be the first time, so maybe that's not a correct definition to say only higher risk to offend youth are referred to formal intervention. But again, I'm just trying to put some verbiage together that can help as we move forward. Youth requiring a filing of a formal petition, assessment risk needs is to be completed to match appropriate service level. Again, this comes from the legislation itself, because as each youth, and I have no doubt that Judge Morica is aware, but SB 92 was signed, and Senate Bill 92 really sets the guidelines forward and assists the courts and the probation department, and actually all of us, on what when in time a youth would be committed to a secure track program, as there will be 6-month progress reviews along the way. So just maybe some other demographics we want to put in here. I put in a sample of youth with previous DJJ commitments to see if those youth were previously under our supervision. Just some things to consider, because as we help build plans, sometimes we may get a first-time offense, but then we do, I think in my past knowledge and thinking back, we've had youth that have had several petitions before the court and on probation as we move forward. So again, these are just, and I'll get this sent out to you guys, are just topics that we can fill in these sections as we move forward. They just give us some blank pages here. You're not missing anything. And then this section here on part three is programs. This is to provide a description of the facilities, programs, placement services, and service providers, supervision, and other responses that will be provided to the target population. I did an opening recommendation here. It's just talking about how we deal with youth with lower level interventions that are not deemed appropriate by the court. So it's a standard that we are dealing with long-term commitment program youth and the areas we would need to address. I am very fortunate we are in this county. working with a multidisciplinary team approach has been something we have done in the past and we continue to do. And then I just broke down each phases for areas for us to continue our conversations, realizing that the first phase as this begins would be the recommendation and court commitment to the Secure Track program. And we'd have to address the eligibility with the adjudication of the 707D offense, probation's recommendation and court order Secure Track. And then left some space if there's other areas. Again, I go back up to here, is if we provide our description, we would be able to show the state at that time when this plan goes to the OYCR, they would understand the approach we're taking with each youth. In phase two would be transition to the commitment process, where multidisciplinary team meetings to review the assessments and probation reports and individual services and case plans. That is very key from the legislation that each of the case plans for each youth committed to Secure Track has to be an individualized service and case plan, and whichever way we want to call it, service or case plan. Their third section was the phase three in custody program services. I did receive, thank you, Don, a packet on behavioral mental health treatment programs that we are provided from the healthcare agency. But the key section here, if you remember last time when we spoke, was promoting healthy adolescent development, family engagement, reentry planning, and linkages to support employment, housing, continued education. Again, we should be able to do throughout this meeting and future meetings is identify what we have, but identify those gaps that we may be missing. The fourth phase would be the transition reentry services program from intake to supervision. The key reason I put that is I believe day one when a youth is brought into our care, I think that transition and reentry service forever, the length of time they are with us should begin at that time. We start building the relationships early, ensure youth and family voice input, collaboration with all partners, and community connection and partnership. I'm going to run back through these. I just wanted to give you guys a heads up of kind of what I put together here, and then we'll move back up through them and see what we would like to discuss about them for today. Part four, describe how the county plans to apply grant funds to address mental health, sex offender, and treatment-related behavioral trauma-based needs. Again, Don Smith provided a great deal of information, which was attached from the healthcare agency, but for an opening statement, I think it's just real key to identify that the Orange County Probation Department has a history of engaging in multidisciplinary teams and a wraparound approach to behavioral mental health service delivery. Again, pulling some of the language that comes from, just trying to keep it simple, pulling from the statute itself, but ensuring that we remain focused from this day forward on the services that we provide and address specifically with these. The next section here was just kind of breaking down a little bit more. For the most part, we do this at this time, but we want to be able to build upon it. Pre and post assessments of developmental assets of intake and case planning process, examples of evidence-informed programs. Everything used to be evidence-based, everything I've heard, but when you look about evidence-informed, I put that in there to move us from always just saying evidence-based. For that, some of the things that we already use at this time, motivational interviewing, mentoring, job readiness, would be look at areas that we want to build upon and improve as needed. The department's committed to staff development, training, and coaching. That is a key part. If you remember last meeting we had, the Chief Deputy Daniel Hernandez had shared, you know, training is a key component for the staff we have. And it was also brought up, and I think it was Steve Kim brought up how important for the whole team where appropriate to be involved in the type of training that's needed to make sure we're consistent in the service that we're providing to you. The next section was talking about family engagement. Family, and the key thing I wanted to put in here too, is supportive relatives too. It's not always mom and dad that youth may go into. Might be an aunt, uncle, cousin, older sibling. So I just put the term supportive relative and identifying that the strengths are needed by the youth. And departments and programs and services should work to enhance those relationships. I'm preaching to the choir here on this call. All of you know the importance of family and supportive relatives for the youth we serve. One of the many reasons of the closure for DJJ Forward is to keep youth close to their community. Clearly, that's a big piece. but not just to identify the family or supportive relatives, but understanding they're going to need to be empowered and educated possibly along the way too. The next section here was talking about to address reentry, including planning linkages and support, employment, housing, again from the statute. I just put the Orange County Probation Department has various partnerships, which we do. Most of you on the call here understand that. And where we would look to improve if needed. How important community-based organizations that provide the support and services, again, around housing, employment, and continued education. The next section was talking about evidence-based, promising trauma-informed and culturally responsive. And I think it was Laura, if I remember, I apologize. If it wasn't, but Laura would give you the credit. We were talking about culturally responsive services, how important that is. Also, the department will expand because we do have some of these things in place today. But upon sustainable, well-developed program models utilized in both juvenile and adult operational areas. And I put the adult side is most, or potentially, some of these youth that will be released will be of adult age, and understanding there may be things we need to pull from adult operations the system, a risk need and responsivity evidence-based overarching framework. We use that in our department. It's general enough where you're addressing risk and need, but the key point there is responsivity. And again, highlighting the treatment services match the needs for individual youth. That's very very clear in the statute that the expectation as these youth come before the court, they will have an individual or service plan. Then the next section is talking about include services and programs for the target population that are non-governmental and community-based providers. So at this point, obviously thanking our community-based folks that are on the call today. We currently use several community-based partners and will continue to expand. And again, that's just a highlight when we identify gaps, we'll need to expand to address this section of the statute. And making sure that we build upon what we have and make it stronger. And then this is where we left off, and I want to go back up before we talk about facility plans. It's very clear in the statute what's expected for the secure track, which includes a secure housing, and then moving through a less secure or less restrictive area. I want to let the committee know that I am in Board of Supervisors was sent a letter on behalf of the court, of the Superior Court, which includes Judge Motueke, reference to the facilities we currently have and some of the county's desires. There's proposals, and we'll be working on that, and I will advise the group as that moves forward, too. I actually have a call tomorrow to Judge Motueke related to that letter. I think the key thing here is making sure our juvenile facilities aim to provide youth with services that are individualized, again, highlighting that for their specific needs. And let's see what I got here for the next section. Retention of the target population within the jurisdiction and rehabilitative foundation. Some of these areas in our plan will continue to be built upon. But the area, again, just highlighting that youth committed to this program will have an array of services to support their success. I think that is key in multiple areas. When you look at the retention of this population and keeping them here, it's very strong in the statute, too, is to avoid, I think it's a term, debt widening, but sending youth, if not needed, to our adult court system. So making sure that we address multiple areas while targeting their assessed criminogenic needs. And then as youth meet their goals and complete program components to phases, we'll have their successes documented for regular reviews of the juvenile court. That, too, is in the statute. And I think it's really key. I can think back in the days when we were only reporting for probation reports, not always highlighting the positive side of what's happening, but was more if you were just talking about where maybe the youth had not met some terms and conditions and possible failures, but how important it is to address their program successes along the way. And the last part here is the department will network and partner with other counties. I put this in here because the importance, as you saw earlier in the demographics, we had no girls that were committed at that time frame to DJJ. So if we get a female that needs that type of service, if we don't have it, or severe mental health needs, and again, serious sex offenders or sex crimes, that we may be able to service here, but we need to be understanding that there may be a neighboring county that may provide a level of service. And I think it would be important to provide the court that information if needed. If the youth could provide a level of service for a period of time in a neighboring county, and then possibly return to us for transition services. So that's part seven in the regional effort. And then always for Nasley and Megan and all of us, it's very important. I highlight that because I'm on several calls with them about the data. And this is a piece we'll need to build upon too. And I just put a variety of sources will be used to collect necessary data. We have a case management system which provides a level of data, and there's other data that we can be collecting. But the important part, and I wrote in here, the department will collect the completion rate of interventions and programs. We'll have to go through that section on data collection on what would be needed to be able to show the success for you. And I think that will take us to 15 pages. So I just wanted to, and we'll get this sent to you, I just wanted to let you know that in working on this plan, we had some great conversation, I'm taking us back up to the first section there, we had some great conversation at our last meeting, and I just want to continue to build upon that before we get to that. So I just want to see if there was any questions. Thank you, Judge Monreiki, for your input just on this first section here, how important it was. This just centered around youth that are already committed to DJJ, and that we need to broaden that area. So at this point, is there any general questions or items from the committee? And then we can just go through each section and continue just to enhance and build upon it. But I wanted to provide some of the information that was shared at our last meeting. And as we move forward, there may be some homework, or lack of a better word, for us to continue to build upon where we identify, and maybe we see an area and we can find within the committee here that we can gather more information for this plan. And all I can see is I see just a few faces. So, Jamie, do you see any
hands up? This is Daniel.
Yeah, go ahead, Daniel.
But for the group, on the demographics, if there's any more specific demographics about our target population, the broader target population, maybe who's currently in custody, who might need to be the current criteria. That can be my homework for the next meeting. I can bring more details regarding educational levels or things like that. On ethnicity, of the seven youth at DJJ, six are Latino or Hispanic, and one is Asian, Asian American. But our general population reflects something similar. 80% of our current population in custody is Hispanic, 10% white, 4% Asian, 4% black, 2% other. So just to give you an idea of the ethnicity of potential youth that we can be dealing with. But get through this process, if you want to give me a list of things that the committee wants to know, I can do that as well.
Okay, Daniel. And I think that's important too when we're looking on the cultural responsivity, how important that is to understand that for our breakout in our groups too. Another part I had seen in a couple other reports talking about number of youth, and I would potentially ask Ken Santini from Social Services, and I actually just had lunch today with Deborah Bates talking about, youth that were involved in the child welfare system, just as, these are just data points that can assist us to be better at what we do. Youth were both parents, father and or mother was in the criminal justice system. I don't know how easy that would be able to gather that. Lynn, I did receive some information on from the Department of Education. Thank you. But I think it's important to understand, youth that have their high school diploma, so we're working on the continued education piece, and understanding that how important career technical education and some of the other avenues that we'll have. Some of these youth may be preparing for college readiness, but making sure that we have that ready for them. And then also, I think it's important too, is the type of offenses that we're dealing with, because when you just say serious violent felony offense, those can range from a variety of different areas, but making sure that we have programs to address those specific needs that can potentially be. I know that we do have a high number of gang-involved youth, and so maybe programs that are related to that to assist that. Anything further on, I'm trying to make sure I'm on the right section, part two that we could add to, if there is, we can always go back to it, but I just want to thank you, Daniel, for the information you were talking about, but if there's anything that the group would like to talk further about, we'll just continue to build upon that, but it is important to be able to see the roadmap of the youth we have as we move through this plan.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure if you'll be in this section, but given such the heavy focus on mental health and some of the contributors for some of these external behaviors, I wonder if there's any data on, you know, any assessments mental health-wise, like what diagnosis, what are we dealing with when we're in this target population? So, I was able to review all the services that we provide, which are really great. But I'm curious to see, you know, what diagnosis were there, what improvements have been made so far in the service that we've been providing so far.
Okay, and as we get to that section, I'm going to move as we get into the programs. I was going to have Don talk a little bit about to see what can be shared or what should be shared in a report. I have no doubt that some of that information is probably protective or probably a general sense of the type of youth we're dealing with or the type of services that were needed. Nasley, I'm going to guess that's where you're headed with that.
Well, yes. I don't want identifying information, given that the numbers are so small. But maybe at a larger scale, have there been any studies that is the target population that we're talking about, and what are the primary diagnoses, the primary, you know, like you said, offenses? But also, again, given that there's such a heavy mental health focus, I'm curious to know what the general sense of statistics are in our larger target population.
And I think that actually, I was looking at the serious and violent felony offenses and wondering about how helpful it might be to call out offenses that were specifically related to substances or drugs versus just serious violent felonies, because I think we know that a lot of youth are involved with drugs. And so if we knew how many of these offenses were drug-related or drug involved. I'm not using the right legal terms, I know, but I think that might be helpful in terms of targeting. We know we need substance use treatment for individuals. That's not new news, but I think having a way to look at the numbers of youth that have offenses that fall within that category would be potentially helpful.
I think those are great ideas. It's just that when you're pulling that data, the serious and violent, it's not typically a drug-related offense. So you'd have to really go into the history of the youth. And I think the assessments, Dawn, that healthcare agency does at intake, I think are probably what's going to drive that data pool, because of the assessments that are done pretty much. I mean, I think we can all guess that the majority of our youth coming in have need for mental health intervention. And then I think there's a good percentage of those youth that also have are in need of substance use treatment. So I think pulling that data is going to be hard, because it doesn't necessarily, it's not driven by the offense itself.
Okay.
But I also think that, Chief, we were talking about the last time with respect to demographics, is if we are able to pull geographical locations as well, because that would definitely help us in at least targeting reentry communities for our youth who are coming out of the facilities.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, Judge, that was important, because you have a higher concentration of youth and services. It'd be difficult if you got that service and it's provided at the far end of the county where there's no need for it, when you have a high concentration with a specific need. So thank you for that.
I just wanted to second a little bit of what Judge Motowike said with respect to what Dawn said, which I think is really important. I totally agree with the judge. Obviously, the SUD issues are not necessarily clear on either the charges or necessarily the police report, but if there's a way that during those intakes, HCA can sort of code, right? Like every client that has, every youth that has a SUD related issue, right? It, maybe it's the major issue, maybe it's a minor issue, but it's still an issue that we want to address. I know that when we've dealt with it on the 300 side, that's continued to be an issue as well, just sort of having a statistic that specifically addresses that factor. I think that is something that's been lacking when we try to figure out need, right, for vault, for, you know, program need and how much bandwidth we need for those kids. I think that's been specifically lacking, and that would be a great thing to add to our pile, but it's not probably going to be done on the justice end, right? It's not really the court function to collect that data. And the second question I had was, maybe I missed something, but with respect to this population and the court, you know, and everybody agreeing that we're looking at the 1990 population, not this very specific population of DJJ kids, is that a number that we're going to be able to pull?
Recording in progress. Recording stopped.
So that we know what numbers we're talking about?
Okay, so I'm going to get to both your questions. So Don, I'm going to have you help me on the assessment piece, if you could, and then I'm going to look into the second half of that question.
Sure. When Health for Agency does an assessment, we do identify any mental health or substance use issues, and we make note of that in our records. There are ways that we can report data out for youth that we have assessed in aggregate. We can't obviously report it per youth, or because the numbers are small, it would be difficult if somebody had a very unusual diagnosis to report that out. But we do capture that. One of the challenges that we've had with our system is that we had this issue when we tried to pull data for YDC in aggregate, was that we can put the diagnoses in, but there isn't a report that we can pull that will pull them out easily for us. So we have to go in and look at each youth individually and then identify what their diagnoses are and then aggregate it manually, which with only 7 youth is not a difficult task and definitely something that we could do. As the numbers grow, looking them up manually would potentially become difficult. So I'm working on my end to continue to push for reports that will allow us to pull diagnostic information out of the system as easily as we can enter it so that we can share the information out in aggregate.
That's kind of where I was going to go as far as information gathering, is we could produce a list of the names and, you know, ID numbers of actual youth who fit this criteria and hand that over, but that's, you know, then they'd have to be a hand, you know, count, I'm sure, and then anonymized for the group. But in the past 12 months, we've had 126 admissions for 707B offenses, at least that I can tell at my fingertips right now. So that might not be the entire, you know, population, but that's probably a good ballpark if we wanted to do a year. Or we could shorten the time to make the list smaller. But that's what we could do, is I could provide names for that account, hand search, if you wanted to do that, just to provide a baseline population of, you know, what kind of mental health issues is that serious and violent offender coming in with. Or you could probably tell what kind of services they've received, you know, while they've been in custody, or like that. But that is a lot of legwork. It wouldn't be hard for us to pull the name, but I'm saying for you, I'm sure, or your staff to pull the details.
Might be a little bit more challenging. I am working on another data request that we received that might dovetail with this, so I'm going to keep my fingers crossed that it might work so that we can do it easily and not have to look them up manually. But again, 126 isn't unmanageable. I think the piece that I wasn't sure about, like for example, when we're talking about there are 2 youth between January and June, there are 7 at DJJ now. We didn't serve the individuals that are at DJJ So you're talking about establishing a baseline of the 126 707 Bs, just to give us an idea of what we're looking at. But it wouldn't even necessarily be that we'd be looking at something specific to these youth, because those seven youth that went to GJJ, DJJ, we may or may not have served. So.
Yeah. So the 126, obviously we don't have all of them in custody now, right?
Right.
We don't have that many in custody, but those they came in and went out or whatnot.
Right.
You know, that's the churning population over the year.
Okay.
But it would be it would to give an idea of the eligible population, maybe, kind of the flavor of the type of
right
youth that we're seeing for those types of offenses.
Okay.
If we're looking at what types of services are going to be needed and maybe where they lived and those kinds of things.
Right. Okay.
And again, I think you bring it. Thank you, Don and Daniel, for that. I think, Megan, that may answer the second part of your question, is that we do need to set that baseline forward. We just did this initial information just to show, if you weren't aware, we do have a relatively low number of youth that were committed to DJJ. But then as Daniel has showed us, that 126 youth over a period of time came in for that offense. But these are just different data points that we'll want to break down, again, because we want to make sure that we have, not only do the individual case plans for these youth, but make sure we have the appropriate programming, or what those underlying, and Donna, correct me if I'm wrong, is it underlying issue or underlying, it's not always the driver of what the offense occurred, but after they come in for the offense, now we're doing assessments forward. We find that there could be substance use issues, mental health issues, or anger issues, or whatever it may be. Those get assessed after the fact.
They're assessed after they're brought in, and it may or may not have anything to do with the offense. I mean, somebody may be very anxious and need intervention, but that may not have anything to do with the offense that they committed necessarily. It's just to be aware of the, I think, factors that are affecting this population. And again, I think that helps to target services if there were trends that we saw. Obviously, with substance use, if we're seeing 90% of youth have a substance use issue, it bolsters, it provides data that then helps bolster the argument for an increase in those types of services, or where, or geographically where those services are located, or how we could target specific types of interventions for substance use to this population differently. You know, it's just data that can help inform our decision making.
Okay. And I think you just brought up a key point too, because in past times, you know, maybe every youth goes through a gang intervention that had nothing to do with the gang involvement. They're not even involved in a gang. Or everybody goes to anger management, but there's not an identified anger issue. Or everybody gets substance abuse therapy or treatment of sort, but they've never used any type of substance abuse. So again, I think that's so specific, and I think that's where the statute intended making it more individual case plans for the court, so they can go, no, this youth is appropriate for secure track because we have, you know, these specific programs to address these identified areas. I think in past times, and again, I haven't read a CYA or the same CYA, a DJJ diagnostic in a long time. I don't even know to what level, and I don't know, Judge, if you have any insight when that diagnostic comes back to the court. Is it that specific for that youth, or is it general? Sorry, Judge. Put you on the spot.
I'm always struggling to find the mute button. it's specific to that youth.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's really key too. I don't think we want to, Don, to your point, we don't want to just create a program to say we have a program, but how important it is we probably have, I'm going to guess in the initial part here, we're going to have a handful of very, very similar type needs of youth. They're all pretty similar to what they may need, but then they have this specific type of need that we'll have to address and be prepared for. Okay, anything else on this section? Again, it's not the last time we'll be at this section. I just want to move through and continue to add on to our sections forward. So Don, looks like you got a little bit of homework, or you created your own homework, and I appreciate you working on that for us there. So, okay. So in this section here, again, Don, thank you. You've sent a pretty extensive breakdown of CGU, which is the court evaluation guidance unit for probation. I think, let's make sure. Because this plan, and I will again share what I know statewide, this plan at this time will go before the Board of Supervisors in the fall, and they just need to make sure that we're addressing all eight areas of the statute. And then it goes up to the OYCR, which is the Office of Youth and Community Restoration. It's not even formed yet. I think it's going to be one of these things. This first plan that goes out will probably be, I won't say generic, for lack of a better term, pretty basic. And then in the coming years, we'll probably end up being more specific, because then again, we may have a larger population of youth that we are dealing with here locally to provide more. But making sure some of the common themes as we go through here that we are addressing. More than likely, there's going to be a substance abuse, potentially use or abuse type of an issue, and as we move forward with those. But as we start putting those programs together, I just wanted to make sure that we identified that specifically in the statute, 707B offense is what would make the eligibility for the youth, and making sure that how we address all of our youth when they come in, that the appropriate service levels for the youth and their family is key that we address. So that section kind of built upon the first section. A lot of these, again, are descriptions of programs and stuff, and I'd like to try to take and be mindful of our time here, too, is if we can look at this section here when we're looking at a phased approach. Now, everything seems to be labeled as a phase, and I doesn't necessarily have to say phase, but I was trying to put as, you know, the youth is arrested, and they're going through the court process with our district attorney and public defender, you know, and then as the youth gets the recommendation, it starts that point forward. And I just want to see if there's anything that we wanted to add or just give the committee's ideas on these different phases. If potentially I may have missed something here. Here I just kind of put some guidelines of where we want to be, but it wasn't really that specific. So looking at the phase of the recommendation, obviously the eligibility is the adjudication for the 707B offense. Probation would be doing that report along with input potentially of our other providers, and then the court order to the secure track. I don't really know if there's anything more, because the work for that youth forward starts in the next phases. But is there anything else in that first phase section that you think we'd want to add? I think it would satisfy the plan that we, you know, we have a system that we're, you know, systematic approach as we're dealing with youth. So I just wanted to kind of break these down or think about it when you come back to them also.
Chief, I might be signing myself up for homework on this one, and I don't mind it. I like the phased approach here, the descriptions, I like that. I just think that, you know, through this whole project or our subcommittee work, I really think, and I have lofty goals, you know that I always do, but I think that we really need to take the opportunity to kind of just, you know, once we identify gaps, or even if we don't identify gaps, take the opportunity to really look at our existing programs and services for this population. And really try to figure out, and you know, you were talking about evidence-based, evidence-informed. We've got a lot. I'm not a researcher, and I don't know everybody's background on the subcommittee. I'm certainly not a researcher in adolescent development and appropriate programs and services for our population, but I know that, you know, Chief, you've worked with Dr. Elizabeth Kaufman. Mm-hmm. We're all familiar with all of the research that she's done in this area, and in particular with this population. I mean, and she's already starting a project at the adult jails for 18 to 25, and her project is going to, it's basically programs and services for the population and focusing on reentry and reducing recidivism rates for this population. So, you know, it's something that we might be able to at least kind of like tap into her brain a little bit, because talking about, you know, evidence-informed, evidence-based programs and services, her pilot project is going to be utilizing that for that population. And that's a big chunk of our population that we're talking about here. So, I mean, I think rather than reinventing the wheel, we might be able to just, like, you know, ask her some questions and see what she's got going on over there, because it would certainly benefit us right now to do an evaluation, a deep dive into, like, what are the best practices for this population, so we can really look at trying to implement them through this, the block grant funding. So I can take on this part if you'd like, and try to talk to her, because I know that that's kind of up and running as far as her pilot project.
So Judge, if I can ask you, why don't we put the two of yourself and myself too, and we'll work that together with her. I'm obviously familiar with Elizabeth's stuff she's done, Dr. Kaufman's stuff she's done with us, and since I would have this plan in hand, we can kind of bring something back to the committee with that. So could you put me on with that, and then we'll at least set up a call, initial call with her?
That'd be great.
Yeah, I don't want to reinvent the wheel either, and I'm also a firm believer. We have some very good foundation programs in place, but I want to look to see where we can enhance and make sure we're not leaving something out that's right there glaring at us. We just don't know what that is without somebody telling us. So, okay, thank you, Judge, for that. So I got my first homework assignment, although I always have a few. Anytime I talk to Judge Modica, I'm going to end up with an assignment. That's okay. I always enjoy it. Okay. All right, so that's phase one, and thank you for Judge Shipp, for your input on that. All of us that have grown up in these systems, we always do things through a phase. I don't even know if there's a different term, but it is a phase. Looking at that next section, transition to commitment process, I look at some of our wraparound programs, some of the different things, and we always seem to have a multidisciplinary team, or collaborative courts that we have in both our adult courts in our juvenile court, so it's always a team approach, and I just didn't want to lose that. I think that's important when a youth comes before a court, that there's a team that has a level of expertise. It's not just probation driving or any specific area driving, but that it is a team approach to review the assessments and probation reports, making sure that we do meet that individualized services and case plan. Some people are moving away from the term case plan and service plan. I just put them both on there for now. We can name it and call it whatever we want, but really I think that is an important piece, because that starts clearly the Secure Track program forward for the youth. So I don't know if there was any input on phase two. If you want to think about it, we can think about it as a committee.
This is Daniel.
Yeah, Daniel, go ahead.
So maybe for next time, if you want to distribute and as an attachment, I can provide the current case plan documents that are being used. They were just revised over the last year or two with the help of our research team, and so brought light years ahead from where they used to be. Includes a transitional plan for reentry and identification of high-risk areas and interventions, and a lot of newer, more modern language when it comes to evidence-informed types of things. So I can share with that, and I think that would be a great opportunity for the folks on the committee to provide input if you wanted to modify that, and that might just benefit, you know, all of you that get it.
So Daniel, that's just our case plan, lack of a better word, it's a form we have.
Right, yeah, and I can just bring a blank template of the form that we can use for in-custody case planning. And the new revised process is that case plan is given to the field officer upon release, so they can fill out with that, whatever's already started in custody.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that, Daniel.
Hey, Chief?
Yeah. Go ahead, Steve.
I don't know if I'm too much in the weeds here, but I think one thing we want to consider is as an individual gets into the Secure Track program, is maybe the utilization of providing a navigator or mentor or a trained community intervention worker. I don't know if I'm going to call that out or if that's too much in the weeds, but that may be a component we could add on to the multidisciplinary team to provide that expertise on the gang intervention issues, some of the other challenges that our youth may face. So I don't know if that's too much in the weeds, but I just wanted to, what it's worth, put out there to specifically call out trained navigators or community intervention worker to help the youth as they get into this program.
Well, and again, again, Steve, I think you bring up a great point. It should start from as soon as possible, even say a youth that's going to spend a considerable commitment time potentially. But that all can change if they meet their programming goals along the way. They need to be prepared to get into the community too, starting early and building that plan and building those connections in the community. So, Steve, real quick, and I've heard the term navigator, but what was the other term that you used?
The community intervention worker.
Okay.
I mean, it's almost like CASA. You know, they do such an amazing job to provide a mentor all the way through. So this would provide a similar service, but they would be trained on trauma, how to do community outreach, and understand some of the gang. Well, they already know the gang culture, and so some of those things.
So if that's identified as a gap, that something's not being done now that we want to provide, then maybe those types of things should also be called out in the plan as possibly needing some kind of MOU or contract or whatever, because it's something that is new and has been identified as a gap. So that way, when it's time to do this, we know what new has been added to the plan or to the system that is going to need to be then part of the second conversation about a budget or contract or MOU.
Well, we have enough evidence. We did a blueprint of the juvenile justice, well, many, many years ago, Daniel. I think we identified that was a gap. So we have a lot of data already explaining that it's important. And so if that's definitely, that's something that I would agree with Steve is that if that gap is still there, that is very pivotal in the transition. When we were able to do work like that in our reentry program, we just found that we were always providing that support of that transition. So if you're I'm definitely anxious to see your plan of your multidisciplinary team, because I wanted to see if there is definitely a community person there or someone there who's able to transition over from being in custody to going back into the community.
I think all of you bring up a great point, because when you look at that connection again, I'm going back to past times, often that was a probation officer making that connection. And there's some probably level where that's appropriate, but how important that is to begin early. That community intervention or outreach person could be working with the supportive family member while the kid's starting to build upon what that family member is going to need for the success too. So, okay, I will make note of that, and I noticed that I have no doubt that Daniel made note of that, but thank you both for that input. I would say that's a gap, knowing this. I'm just flashing back to the probation officer days I had, and we pretty much did all of that. And I know it's improved greatly. And there's a level of expertise and relationships that get built there that's so key for the success. So, okay.
Go ahead. For a moment, Chief Sentman.
Yeah.
Something that I would like to add, I know our programs in juvenile hall, we do have peer specialists that are assigned to work with youth, and they are designed to build relationships and assist them as they make that transition out to the community. I think it's definitely important to have a broad array of mentors and folks that can help the youth and their families. So I don't think we're the only ones that can deliver that service, but I wanted to make sure everybody was aware that there are folks doing that right now. Not enough of them, but we do have some. So we've started down that road.
And I think that's an important point, is that we all have those types of people, but I think the gap is what Steve is saying, someone to tie them all together and be by the youth when they interact with all those people. Because there's a school transitional counselor, and you have mental health workers, and you have a transitional person, and there's a probation officer in the field, to have the one person who's actually walking alongside them, that glue all those services together.
And I think we get a level of consistency too. I still can remember the first youth I supervised, and you list this whole long list of terms and conditions to a 15-year-old, and they probably didn't hear any of them. They just want to get out of your office. And the reality is, you just gave them a big old long list, and really you probably should have started with the parents. Have them to help start navigating that. And I have no doubt the judge sees it. You know, a lot of moving pieces real quick, and more likely the outcome for that youth or the families, they just want to get out of that system. But there's steps along the way. So great, great points on all of those. Okay. We've done many discussions, but we want to continue this to identify. Interesting, today I had lunch with a couple of colleagues, so Deborah Bates from Social Services, and we're talking about the housing piece and how important, when you look at the youth that will be getting transitioned and out of our care, they will be of age where they may not have a place to live unless they're able to go back to their family. How key the housing piece is. We've all lived through the that we were talking about the riverbed and how that grew into a housing option, which is clearly not conducive to any level of success. So I think we work well on education. I think we work well in a lot of areas, but I just want to make sure we're mindful of that housing. Clearly, employment is always big, too, because when somebody lands that employment and makes their own money and a check to make decisions, and housing can come with that. But I know there's a lot of housing opportunities. One thing I was going to probably ask Daniel to look in with DJJ, you know, how do they work their housing piece out when youth get out? Some youth probably have the benefit to go home, but not every youth does, and that means they're just going to turn to the street. That's, and Steve, you may see that. You know, that's the first thing you say, I got nowhere to go, nowhere to live. Well, that only leaves a couple of options, and that's the options we're trying to move away from. Any areas? I think that's going to be our largest section to continue to work on. But those are just some highlighted areas. I wanted to make sure that we had focus and where all of your level of expertise comes around. I still look at that promoting healthy adolescent development. Well, we're going to do that along the whole way. But why they put that in there? Maybe that was missed when the kids 14, 15, 16 or something. And this goes without saying on family engagement and reentry planning, we've been talking about that. But I think that planning needs to not start, you know, you're getting out next week, let's start planning. It should start from the beginning, because those linkages into the community is going to be really determine the success too. Or at least give a youth, when you think about youth that are in custody, their incentives are sometimes few and far between, but they know that there is going to be an option to get out into the community, and it's not just go back home to where you were, but you're going to be connected to different pieces. It's very key.
If I may, in I'm not quite sure if I don't have this document memorized by heart, but it was definitely interesting to see how much services is being provided at currently, as far as quantifying, like, do they do an average of 12 sessions? Is it weekly sessions? Do they do weekly and group sessions? Is it voluntarily programmed? Like, I'm definitely quantifying some of the services, the dosages that are being provided in the in-custody program services.
Okay. Thank you, Ashley. And again, go back to what Judge Moreke said earlier was, you know, fortunately, we're not starting from scratch, and we do have a lot of great high level of programming and identifying those and then really breaking down what's missing in them. I'm aware of some probation departments across the state that are really starting from a blank piece of paper, which is unfortunate, because this you know, July 1st is right around the corner, and before you know it, it's January or July 2023, and DJJ is not there. So how important it is to have services identified, but starting to have that plan to build upon what's going to be needed.
And I think this one, is that phase three, is probably going to be a meaty section, you know, for the group, obviously. That's where I think a lot of the work is going to take place with the population condition. If at all, if it's a new service or a gap. On restorative circles, like a... delay. So, maybe Lynn, if you want to incorporate your educational stuff that you had submitted, I know the chief and I, into this section as far as what could possibly be provided regarding CTE and education. And I can add what is already being done with our MOU with the college, for example. And then I'll look into the on the probation side, the services that we're looking at in addition to, you know, healthcare services. If Don, if you want to look at what services on the mental health side are being provided. So I think we all are going to have a lot of work to do here. And then Steve and our other, you know, collaborative partners and Asley with regard to anything else, right? Anything else that's missing that we want to add or think is important, then we should probably do the same kind of exercise. I guess that would probably connect to the Elizabeth Kaufman conversation as well. You know, what services, what's effective, those kinds.
I just have a question logistically, as we're going to work on this template. Is this going to be in a shared document? Are we going to be doing individual pieces and then somebody will cut and paste those in? How logistically are we going to fill this out?
That's a great question, Lynn. So far I've been the cut and paster, just trying to put, you know, the pieces just to get our conversations going. I would say, because we're going to have meetings every couple of weeks here, we're still adding a lot of pieces to it. Just getting out there even further, the actual plan that will be submitted doesn't have to be multiple pages of every piece. It just needs to hit the areas, but we don't want to lose the importance of what we're describing for our plan. So I'll have more information to understand. I want to make sure what we submit to OICR is what we need.
Hello?
Oops, he froze up.
I'm back with you.
There you are.
Yeah, I don't know
why. Oh, there he is.
He went to a TV timeout or something.
Hey, good.
Back.
Yeah, I got kicked out too for a while.
Yeah. Hey, Chief, what I was going to say was once everybody kind of takes a look at kind of the sections and revises, I thought I heard Judge Morike say that she was going to take and shoulder this whole thing. So that'll work. No.
That's probably when my Zoom went down. I didn't
hear
that.
That's right. That's what I heard, at least. No. What we can do is certainly as the committee members start putting in the ideas, the chief had mentioned earlier that the plan will be submitted to the state. We have been kind of in the background working with the CEO's office. So what we can certainly do is coordinate with CEO, in this case, Kimberly Adette Thomas, to make this a document, a shareable document, kind of lend to your point.
Yeah, I mean, like, are we going to try to do a Google type of thing where at least you can track all the changes and see the history and it gets saved? Or I'm just wondering, just being on a couple of committees and having to provide input.
Right.
I'm interested in that.
Yeah, one of the challenges is going to be, and I know Jamie will correct me if I'm way off, but What we have to be careful about is we certainly don't want to start modifying things without publicly sharing it. So, and Jamie, is that
I'm not real comfortable about having a shared document where everybody here can have access to it. It's,
okay.
No.
Yeah.
So we'll work on what's the best way to take this plan to the next step. If I can make that commitment to everybody.
I like the Judge Motoike shouldering it myself. But that's just me.
Brian, you just like taking advantage of the fact that I can't find my unmute button that quickly.
Yeah, maybe there's a master document version. And, you know, as people submit things, it might be 100 pages long, but then eventually you whittle it down so it's all done public. You know, where this is the latest draft. You know, and, but maybe at the beginning, as long as someone's keeping the master copy.
So So far I've been the master copy, but I'll work again for the committee. I will work along with Brian, and we'll see what we can figure out, and Jamie, what's the best way to do this. Okay, so section three, we talked about that, and then transition services, just what you had said, Daniel. I think the INCESU program is a big piece. The transition reentry services program from intake to supervision will be a big piece also. I just wanted to highlight the importance of family, building those relationships early, family input also, and then collaboration with partners. That's one thing we do outstanding in this county. We continue to do well along with our community connections and partnerships. So yeah, I think section.
Are there people?
No, I can't see it.
On this point, the chief had made a point a while ago about the term responsivity. I wanted to maybe unpack that for people. It's kind of an industry term, but it refers to things that limit a youth's success, but that are not criminogenic. Like they don't have anything to do with the youth's risk per se, but they influence success. So they could be things like the cultural barriers. Gaps, developmental disabilities, transportation problems, those kind of things that have nothing to do with crime but impact a youth's success. So that's what I think is really going to come into play during this transitional piece, is that's where we lose a lot of youth, sometimes for things that have nothing to do with their criminal behavior. So that's a shame. Right? That's what we really need to be careful of and address. So that's responsibility.
Okay. Whoop. Am I back with you guys now? All right. I had to go get some change from the phone, from the booth, and put some more into the Zoom call. Oh, let's just all meet in person here soon. It'd be a heck of a lot easier. Okay. So we're back. Thank you, Daniel. I did hear you there. Thank you for filling that in. Okay. So transition. I think this is just highlighting what we're saying. I don't want to keep repeating at this point, but I again thank Don Smith for providing the information about the mental health piece. Don, I'm not sure exactly on the sex offender treatment program, and I can check with Daniel too, but to make sure that we have some level of pieces that we would need to put in the plan to address that. Not just say, hey, there's a sex offender program.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, we can get more specific. I actually think when we met last time, I said that wasn't something that we're providing, but that was inaccurate.
Okay.
It is something that we're providing. So if we want to provide a little more detail on that to flesh it out, we can definitely do that. And then, Daniel, I didn't mean to step on what you were going to say.
Yeah, so again, it's kind of the blessing and curse, because we are one of the few departments that provides a sex offender program, and we in collaboration. Obviously, it's a healthcare agency that's providing the program, but that's why a lot of agencies are struggling what to do with their sex offenders in this population, and that's where the three counties have proposed or requested funding for to develop hubs for other counties to provide services to sex offenders. Again, blessing and curses. We already have the program here, but the curse is we have to do something better now. So, so it's a good problem to have. But so yes, we are providing the program. I mean, healthcare agency is providing the program here in Orange County, and I think over the years, even with the previous realignment, juvenile realignment, where sex offenders were still permitted to be sent to the Department of Juvenile Justice. Again, we only have one there now, and that is, in my opinion, the result of our juvenile court trusting our local system, and liking the fact that we have a program here in custody where you can stay local, and again, in a trusted environment, you know, in our facilities. And so we have been housing these long-term youth with sex offenders for 10 years now already. And so that is, again, it's established, but as far as what we could do better or what we could do more of, I think we could, you know, enhance the hours and emergency responses or something to make it, you know, maybe more family engagement or something on that transitional side, or we definitely need assistance with the housing piece for this population after release. A lot of times they have a very good family to go home to, but the victim is still living in the home and things like that. And so, and there's very few foster care options for this population. So those are just some ideas, either expanding the mental health services to longer hours or more hours or different hours. I don't know about the curriculum, if there may be an enhanced curriculum or for more serious offenders, if there are different curricula for different types of offenders, I'm not sure that, that might be something to look into. And again, just the housing piece. But we already have an established sex offender program, so that's
okay.
We're leaping off of a high point early.
Okay. On that note then too then, so Daniel and Dawn, if we can work on what we want to put in a plan, again, not just saying we have a program, but maybe what the aspects of that program are that, you know, that would show the plan that we do have a program. As for a regional hub, and there is a section here talking about regional hubs, there's not too many counties, maybe up in the northern part of the state, where they just don't have the services. Again, as Daniel said, we're pretty fortunate to have just about everything we need here. I just want to make sure, as the judge said earlier, identifying what we have and then finding those gaps and building upon it, because this is an opportunity, as she had mentioned earlier, to do that. And I know housing is going to be a big one, because if these youth are in their 20s, early 20s upon their releases, housing is going to be quite difficult, but there is numerous availabilities to them. And Ken, that's what I brought up with social services. Deborah was talking about just different, if these were former foster care youth, there's a different, a lot of different eligibility criteria there that these youth may be able to meet to assist with housing into the future.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. And then we talked about this earlier, talking about utilizing pre and post assessments. Again, I just using some generic terms, we can use our specific terms. But again, addressing and really aligning ourselves to make sure that youth are provided every opportunity to make them, you know, get them better than we received them. And I think this is just another thing, and again, I think Steve had brought this up last time, is that it's not just probation staff getting training, but that staff development is this team, MDT team that we work on as we move forward. And then the added piece, and again, I'm going to give Laura credit for this for some reason. I remember her saying it, but she did, and I'll still give her the credit. That culturally responsive piece, I've been hearing a lot and reading different research about that, and one of those things where not one size fits all, but really understanding and getting the level of specific programming needed to address cultural needs. Family engagement, I think, is an area we can continue to build upon. I'm well aware of a program we have and we continue to build upon, but really going to rely heavily too on our collaborative community partners where we can build upon this. That piece of the supportive relative is real important. I think the court would really want to know, okay, this kid is not, or this young adult is not going to be going home, but they're going with a supportive relative. And if we empowered that supportive relative to be build them for success too, in addressing forward the person into the community. Steve, I would just ask you, I don't know if you're aware of or what you may do, and Asley also, and Megan, related to this as you get out into the community, so, but the importance of what do those family members and supportive relatives need from us? More than just encouraging, but that's more on our side, encouraging those family or rebuilding. I know social services is built on reunification of families. Well, that's where this piece, I think, comes in for us too, the best we can. Daniel gave a great example where a person may have a great home, the kid cannot go back there because maybe potentially the victim is still there. And how do we ensure that that family relationship is still built upon? Okay. Let's see here. Again, these all seem to be the same when I read over this. It's like I just started typing the same thing over and over, but they're all very similar in our discussions. And the planning and the linkages to support employment, housing, and continuing education. So as we figure out how to get this information out to you folks, I would ask if you have areas of expertise in those areas, we would need that. And I think we talked about that. I wanted to talk a little bit about facility planning before our time was up here. So, okay. Anything on those sections, 1 through 4, I appreciate we've had a lot of good information. That's what these meetings are intended to do, and then we just start putting that plan in place. I did want to talk a little bit about our facility so that the committee is aware of some next steps and where it's headed. Obviously, with the Secure Track program, we currently have a juvenile hall, we have the Youth Leadership Academy, we have the Youth Guidance Center, and then we have 2 youth reporting centers, and we also have an adult day reporting center. So we do have some established type facilities that can be used. Right paralleling this, prior to 823 coming into place, was the county's initiative in integrated services initiative. And now correct me if I'm wrong, Brian, OC Cares Justice Reform. I don't have the name of it, but it's the Integrated Services Committee has grown. And often these plans get moving for the county in different areas, and different things are identified. And what's been identified is are the different facilities we have. One in particular, the Youth Guidance Center, is identified as potentially it could be used for something other than a juvenile facility. There have been ongoing discussions, and the court has recently just submitted a letter to the Board of Supervisors expressing their concerns and some suggestions. We will continue to work on that. As of we sit here today, we have Juvenile Hall, we have the Youth Leadership Academy, and we have the Youth Guidance Center as facilities for the youth that we'll be serving. Now, how we use those facilities and if it's a living unit in that facility, we'll have to move forward. But we're going to need to look to make sure that to follow the statute, how important it is that there's not an expectation that the youth would spend the entire time in a secured setting if it's not needed. If the court finds through all the different assessments and reports that are brought before them and they need a less secure type facility, Juvenile Hall is all security. And Youth Leadership Academy is somewhat of a step down, with the Youth Guidance Center being the most less restrictive area we have. And I'm well aware of that. We'll continue to work forward on that. But I just want to make sure that you folks understand on the committee, and most of you on this committee are all aware of this, that we're going to have to identify our facilities more than likely with the numbers we have. At this time, we're to work with the number is low. We would probably identify a living unit within our juvenile facilities to start the Secure Track program, and then figure out, and I would ask the committee to be thinking about what would be best, how we use the Youth Leadership Academy, as well as the Youth Guidance Center and the Youth Reporting Centers as potential facility plans. Now, if you're not familiar with our Youth Reporting Centers, we have one in the northern part of the county, which we've actually moved to a bigger and larger facility, which we'll be able to address and meet more youth's needs. And then we have our one in Santa Ana off of Grand Street. But I just want the committee to keep in mind that we have all those available to us at this time. If any updates come with that, I will let you know. But we need to be thinking about what that would be needed, because ultimately when you look in the SB 823 language, the youth will be appearing before the court for the judge at 6-month intervals, and there could be at a time where the court feels comfortable enough that the youth can be given the opportunity to go to a different place to continue the services, which might not necessarily be our juvenile hall. So when you look what I wrote in here, the youth who commit serious crimes need provided with options to address their rehabilitative needs. I just said it in about 50 too many words, or too many more words that were needed, but that's really what needs to make sure that the county provides as many options to address their rehabilitative needs in a safe environment designed to treat specific criminogenic factors over time. The key thing here too is that balance between community and facility and safety concerns, and making sure those opportunities there promote behavior change in the youthful population. Again, we have all these things, the basics are there for us. We're just going to need to identify and build upon what we have. We currently house our youth with 707B offenses together. I'd have to lean more on to Daniel and our staff with our facilities to be more specific about this. But that's what this section in Part 5 is identifying. And the one concern I have, and I'm going to say it before the judge does, so I apologize for jumping ahead of you, but we are very limited for the female youth that we have in this county. It really is juvenile hall or the youth guidance center. And we are going to get that youth, unfortunately, that female youth at one time that may need that secure track program, and we're going to be prepared for that, whether we can address their needs here locally or we're going to have to use a regional approach with that. But I just wanted to make sure the group understood where we stand today. The county has a very big plan ahead to address both adult and juvenile populations, and many of you on this call are on that committee in a variety of different ways too. So,
So real quick on the facility side, for us, the going tentative plan would be to house youth initially in Unit T at Juvenile Hall, or A unit at Juvenile Hall, and then pursuant to 823, if youth are going to be reduced to a less restrictive option, then that would be done by court order to either the Leadership Academy or the Youth Guidance Center. And by definition, those do not have to be anything special. The intent of the assumption is the intent of the court in making such an order wants those youth to participate in the existing programs at those lesser restrictive facilities. So they don't need to, youth don't need to be separated, they don't need to be in a different unit, or only with other secure track youth or anything like that. So the idea is that we would be able to provide the bulk of the secure track services to the youth at this particular juvenile hall unit. However, if they're going to college, they can go to college. If they're going to TRIO program, they can participate in a group with other youth. So they don't have to be segregated, but we're thinking more on the age issue or the maturity issue. That's why we would like to keep them together, kind of for their benefit as well, that they may have different needs and different interests. And what we've heard from some of the long-term gang involved youth is that they might be doing very well, and then they're 22 years old, and here comes a new 15-year-old who's got to play the gang game again, and they get tired. The older, more mature youth who have moved past that get tired of that. And so we're hoping, again, by keeping the older youth together and keeping the secure track youth together, we'll be able to provide them the services that they need, and as well as the opportunities and activities and other things that might be more geared toward an older, more mature population. So we could serve them a couple of different things.
Okay, thank you, Daniel. And as we're getting wrapping up here again, I'm watching the time for us here. This section here is just making sure that what we intend to do with our youth, and I just put the statement in here that you've committed to this program, we'll have an array of services to support their success in multiple areas. And we can put some closing remarks on that, but that was most of that was coming from the statute itself. The regional effort, I think it would be very important for us to make sure that we just leave that open at this time and be determined. I would want to close our secure track program off to not be inclusive to potential female population, or if the youth that has a severe mental health needs and or sex offender. There's like, we may have that section covered, but those were some identified areas that they've been talking around in the state as it relates to the youth. Our girl population, our female population tends to be quite low, but nevertheless, if that case comes, it would be very important for us to make sure that we provide the court the ability to have some level of programming. So as I continue to work with our neighboring probation departments, just to say, county, the Riverside County comes up with a female program, we would look into that, see what that's about. If we need that, we would have an option if needed. I think the key part, though, instead of, if you think back at DJJ, the youth were sent to, for example, Ventura School, and then they stayed there the whole time, then they're released from Ventura School. Potentially, there'd be an option for our youth is maybe they get the programming piece there, and the court is satisfied with the programming needs met there. But as they work on the reentry and the transition piece, they come back to us, and we work that to get them back in the community. I think that will be real key and something to think about for the group. And then the last one, I always am Nasley still up on my screen here. So when I think of data, I usually think of Natalie in a positive way on this. But Natalie, you brought up a great point. I think with data, it's real important too. It helps us to continue to make sure what we're doing is working. It's we're not just doing it because we say we're doing it, but we're doing things that are actually having impact in the positive direction. And I know, Dawn, you brought up some suggestions of things we can do, and this would be a section that we continue to move to. Maybe we just have some baseline data that we start with, but we're going to want this to be a section that can be fluid and open for us as we move forward. And that's why I just put this, the department will collect completion rates. That doesn't always mean, I guess that gives you some levels, a youth completed a program, but what happened after that program? We know that that's really key when they get into the community. Daniel brought up that our case plans work within our facilities, they transfer into the community. So a youth could be doing outstanding, got their high school diploma, then they go out into the community. Are those things transferring those skills into the community for their success forward? And I see, Nasley, you're shaking your head, so I'm heading down the right path there. I have been listening.
Research influences practice. So how do we know we're doing well with our interventions? Well, research will tell us that, and also research will inform what interventions we should use, and then as well as practice will inform research. So they both go hand in hand, so I'm really excited about this, and yes, I'm very, very happy about data. I don't know why, but I am.
Nasley, I think you're going to, it just sounds like you may assist us and be a good, a very good subject expert on part 8 of this.
I'll give you all the data I got. No.
You guys have a
really great research department.
Yeah.
So, I mean, again, I think it begs to take a look at that, because when you're putting interventions, we need to have a research that informs us of how well we're doing. And so, I know usually this is the last thing that usually gets funded in anything, but I think it needs to be a focus to show that the little money that we have, that at least we're making the most effect and the most, better informed decisions while we're providing these interventions.
Exactly. And we do have a juvenile-specific researcher, so we'll look to see what we may need to do to enhance that. Because, again, they may have some of this data already available, but what do we need to build upon? Nasley, to your points that you brought up. So, okay, so that's what I have for today. I'm trying to watch our time here again and for today's meeting. Again, I appreciate everybody's input as we continue to add to these sections. We're so fortunate to not only have the collaboration and the willingness to do what we need to do, but we've got a lot of these systems that need to be in place are there. We just need to get them identified and move them. Uh-oh, sound like a motorcycle driving through the meeting there or something. So, okay, so I'm going to go to, is there anything then for item 3? I'm going to see if we have any public comments for item 3. We did that first. It's been a while. Jamie,
We haven't asked for item 3 yet.
Okay. So for item 3, anything further from the committee? And I'm going to take that down. Thank you. All right. There we go. Okay. Jamie, can you ask if there's any public comments related to item number 3?
If anybody wishes to speak for item 3, if you can hit the hand raise icon or *9 on your phone. No request.
Okay. And then item number 4, discussion of subcommittee member group reports. All of us at different times throughout this discussion over the last couple hours identified areas that we we'll bring to our next meeting. Is there anything? We don't really have any official subcommittees. Judge Madureke, I know that you had a group that was working. Have you guys had anything that you wanted to discuss or report out? Or?
Not right now. Thank you, though.
Okay. Okay. Any other committee members? Okay. How about public comments then, Jamie?
Yes. Anybody wish to speak for item 4, the subcommittee member group reports, if you can hit star 9 or the hand raise icon? No requests.
Okay, thank you. Okay, now we'll move to a public and or subcommittee comments. So one comment I wanted to bring in, and I apologize, I should have brought this up earlier, and I don't remember who mentioned it, but how important it would need to get, look to where we can get input from youth that maybe have served in DJJ. I know we've talked to some of the youth that we have in our facility, but where that, maybe they become some of those people to assist as navigators, but to get their input also along the way. And I'm going to look back in my notes to see where we might be able to fit that in. But I think that's, when we talk about the voice of the families, I think it's just as important as to have the voice of the youth that we serve and or have served in the past.
So Steve, this is Daniel.
Yeah.
Regarding youth in the facility, and I'm not sure about youth that have formerly been with us or formerly been with DJJ, however, I met with the Juvenile Justice Commission to give them an update on some of the 823 related things regarding probation. And the Juvenile Justice Commission volunteered to facilitate focus groups with our youth in custody if that's something that we wanted to do. So if you know, non-system player possibly, or just a independent observer, they volunteered to do that. That's something that.
All right, Daniel. Okay, thank you for that. All right, do we have any other committee reports? Anybody want to say? That's how we're. If I didn't know we're getting closer to 4 o'clock, I'd say we're just before lunchtime. It gets quiet on these Zoom calls when we get near the end. Okay, and do I need to ask for public comments one more time, Jamie?
Yeah, just general public comments. If anybody wishes to speak, if they could hit star 9 or the hand raise icon. No requests.
Okay, thank you. All right, everybody. Well, then we will adjourn this meeting. Our next meeting will be June the 17th, 2021 at 2 p.m. At this time, it will be virtual until we know different. I know there's different people amongst the state that are meeting, making some decisions about us. And then I appreciate everybody's input. And most importantly, we're going to do the best we can for the youth we serve. And I know we're all committed to that. So enjoy the rest of your afternoon. And thank you, everybody.
Thank you.